Claire Henner, thank you very much for joining us. Claire, you and I have known each other for a while. I think I first learned about you when you were working at Selfridges 4 or 5 years ago. You are the global VP of e-commerce at Unilever, and I understand you've been recently promoted into this seemingly large remit. Welcome, and thanks for being involved in this podcast series. The first question I wanted to ask you is, what is it that you do? What is your remit? And tell us a little bit about what e-commerce means at Unilever.
Thanks very much for having me, Rupert. Good to connect after all this time, especially in the current circumstances. So thanks very much for having me. So I'm Claire. I oversee our global e-commerce strategy and execution. And basically what that means is that I look at our portfolio. Is it fit to sell on e-commerce? What adaptations do we need to make? Is there new opportunities that we potentially stretch to? Our content, our media, as well as some of our key enablers from supply chain. Clearly, it's quite different servicing for online versus some of our bricks and mortar retailers. So really the operating model. And of course, critically within that are people. So we've got a community of around 700 people all around the world working within e-commerce. And now considering COVID, our teams have been busier than ever. So we've really seen this channel shift that we probably expected within the next 3 to 5 years literally happen in a matter of months, even in our most developed markets like China, for instance, where nearly 30% of our business is in e-commerce. We're seeing huge acceleration happening. So so the role is very varied, no day is the same. And we've been building our e-commerce approach within Unilever for quite some time. As I said, the acceleration that's happened over the last few months, it means exactly that. We are accelerating everything that we've been working on to really capitalize on the opportunity and growth that we're now seeing in this channel.
And so e-commerce in a FMCG business like yours, does that really essentially mean that you are helping sell your products through retailers' e-commerce channel? Or are there other direct consumer or other channels that you're also looking at?
Yeah, so the way that we look at e-commerce is B2C and B2B. And when we look at it from a B2C perspective, we look at three distinct models. So one of them is omnichannel, so that's your traditional bricks and mortar. As you know, as no surprise to anyone, that we've got a very substantial business with hypermarkets, supermarkets, etc. But also, we're seeing really core growth coming from markets in Asia. Around aggregators like fast delivery models that really help to really grow the O plus O opportunity, that omni-channel landscape. Then there's pure play, and of course this is all getting a bit grey as the likes of Amazon and Alibaba start to merge and build their businesses offline. But essentially it's the pure players, the marketplace models that are a big part of our business as well. And then we've got new revenue streams, and within new revenue streams there's direct to consumer, which is mainly where a lot of our acquired brands play. But equally, we're seeing social commerce, in particular in markets like China or Indonesia, really growing very rapidly as well. So it really looks at a whole plethora of business models that we really bunch under new revenue streams. And then you've got business to business. Now, that's the digitization of our existing trade businesses, big wholesale businesses, as we create digital platforms to allow these businesses to retail online. But equally, in markets like India, where we've got a big population of mom and pop stores, we've created a digital platform that's allowed them to retail their goods online. And then the likes of you and I can order from them, and then the boy in the bike can deliver to them. So there's that side of our business as well, which is more business to business to consumer. So e-commerce is a very broad term with many models underneath it. And then you start breaking it down by retailers. I mean, like, Amazon has 11 different models within its business model. So it's quite complex, but that's how we certainly look at it within Unilever.
I remember before you joined Selfridges, where I think you worked for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, nearly six, actually.
Your was it more 6 years? 6 years.
Yeah.
Your career was very much brand marketing and marketing in its sort of wider church of skills and areas of customer engagement. in your e-commerce role now, how much of that is about enabling trade versus marketing and brand marketing?
Yeah, you know, I think it really depends what way that you badge e-commerce. You know, certainly from my background, I have a marketing background, as you say, and I look at e-commerce as marketing and marketing as e-commerce. You know, clearly there is a trading component. You have to be commercially savvy to be able to work this side of the business. But really, when you think about the digital storytelling capabilities that we've got to be able to really bring our brand purpose alive, if we think about the online and offline purchase journeys that shoppers make, you know, they don't suddenly think, one day I'm going to experience our brand via mobile, next day I'm going to go into store. They think about the holistic journey, and that's the way that we, you know, are looking to approach e-commerce. It's as much as selling online as well as the influencing that it does to in-store purchases. And so connecting the consumer journey becomes really important to us. And that's why our brands and storytelling and the bringing together of our holistic media planning becomes really, really important.
But the when I was looking at your site again before this for a bit of a refresh, there are a huge array of brands that we're familiar with, and many which are more relevant to certain international markets, talking of how global your company is. But they cover food and refreshment, home care and beauty and personal. Of course, in food and refreshment, that includes companies like Ben & Jerry's, Magnum, Marmite and PG Tips, amongst others. Can you tell us anything about any anecdotes or experiences that Unilever has had to deal with or perhaps has been able to monopolize on during this last 3 or 4 months of the lockdown? I was just wondering perhaps whether more people have bought ice creams than they otherwise would in the spring or anything else that has been different to the cadence of trading for you as a business.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing I'd say, is that for Unilever, you know, this is a crisis that we're experiencing, a pandemic. So actually, we go back to the principles of our company. We're here to do good by planet and people. So we had to respond with the right duty of care. So, you know, firstly for us has been really important that we look after our people and our teams all across the world. So as we've kind of, you know, gone into lockdown, we've also closed, you know, pretty much all our offices around the world. So we've all gone to been working from home. And so there's many, you know, many stories that are cropping up all around the world. But as you can imagine, you know, the great thing about working at Unilever is that we have the essentials in life. And if, when you go back to basics, and, you know, this certainly happened in the midst of lockdown and COVID, and of course we're still living with that, is that everybody wanted a hand sanitizer. So brands such as Lifebuoy became really, really critical. Or, you know, as we started to use hand sanitizer more, hand cream, then, you know, protecting your skin became really important. So suddenly Vaseline, you know, was able to educate consumers about how to protect your skin. And that really relates and goes back to the principles of the brand, right through to Domestos and Cif as we start to clean our homes more, keep our businesses clean, you know, really starting to see those essentials really start to increase in what people needed. And then it was our job to make sure that we were serving them with what they needed. But then we've got really great stories of agility. So yes, we've seen in-home consumption of ice cream go up as out-of-home has obviously declined. But then, you know, sometimes it's been a really simple thing. So for example, you know, in our UK team, they saw that people were looking for antibacterial hand wash. We had a SKU in our portfolio that had all of that, all of those claims was actually an antibacterial hand wash. We optimized the product title on Amazon at 10 o'clock, and by 10:30, the stock had completely gone. And then Amazon worked with us to double their order of that particular SKU. So it's things like that, just really quick, agile ways of working. It doesn't have to be, you know, us, you know, opening a million factories to be able to keep up with demand. Sometimes it's just been those really small, agile moments that have really enabled our teams to react with speed to serve our consumers better.
And that's really interesting. If you think about, again, that the global markets that you serve and the amount of offices you have, albeit, as you say, Claire, a lot of people clearly working from home, if you're to react like you've just described, that must mean a lot of baton passing as people go to bed at the end of their work day and someone else wakes up in the next day. Has that been the case where there's been a lot of connectivity with your colleagues across the globe to continue to react to demand and supply issues?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, if we look at some of the biggest challenges we've had to overcome, we've truly used our sense of being a global team, but, you know, being virtual means we're more connected than ever. So, you know, we've definitely seen a big job that we've had to do connecting all of our teams around the world to ensure that we could keep in stock of some of the essentials, you know, keep our factory production going. We've done the big shift, like every company, to working at home, and that has been change. But I guess, you know, Unilever's been very well set up to do that because we have flexible working anyway. And you know, people are used to working from home. And there's a lot of our teams that actually work at home as full time as part of their roles. But we're a global community, so that working day and night has really been the baton that you kind of describing. So as one country closes for sleep, the next one is waking up. So it has enabled us to be able to pick that. You know, myself and my team are in global roles. So that also brings a yin yang of us trying to create the right balance as we stay connected from early morning till quite late at night, servicing all those parts of the world. But, you know, some really, truly amazing stories that, you know, I was just highlighting just one of our businesses and teams coming out stronger together. And I think that's the spirit that we've been operating within the business.
How many people work across e-commerce at Unilever, roughly? I won't hold you to the last person, but...
There's about 700 of us.
How many people under... 700. Wow, excellent. There have been opportunities, there have been challenges for all sorts of businesses. And I was really interested to get this perspective from you, Claire, and that of Unilever's. But I wanted to just talk a little bit more about sort of environment and social impact and your business that continues to talk about investing for good and doing the right thing, which you smartly brought me back from talking about the promotion of Magnum ice creams and talking about some of the perhaps the more important things in terms of sanitization and personal care. But could you just tell us a little bit more about what you're involved in terms of being a socially conscious business and trying to do the right thing? Because I understand, you know, across the likes of packaging and environment and so forth, there's a huge amount of effort going on as a business to ensure that you play your role.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess, you know, our North Star as a business is to create sustainable living commonplace. And we do believe in doing good, you know, is the way forward for any business, because you reap the rewards of doing good to the planet and by people. And so, and also if you go back to the foundations of the company, we started as a soap company. Lord Lever, you know, fundamentally built, you know, the ethos of the company by keeping people hygienic, kept people in work, kept people healthy. So, you know, it's quite ironic in many ways, this current situation, that we've just gone back to the founding principles of our business. And I guess when I look at, you know, what we're doing within e-commerce, and some of the debates that maybe are going on in the industry, as people start to move to buying online, then what impact does that have from an environmental perspective? So we've done, you know, some early research within our R&D teams with a company called SIAC, and we've started to analyze, you know, does online shopping create more CO2 emissions, as one example? And, you know, from our early studies, we can see that there seems to be definitely an inflation of, you know, when you look at CO2 emissions. On the flip side, we're seeing a lot of innovation happening. So if you look at Ocado, all of their fleet is electric vehicles. If you look at a company like Zara, I ordered from them quite recently, and right down to their packaging, they've been very clear that every part of their logistics has been offset with a carbon emission that they are funding themselves, and also it was delivered by an electrical scooter. So I think the developments and the kind of next wave that I see is people start to accelerate buying online, people start to become more concerned about the environmental impact? Is it packaging? Is it the fact that there's more delivery vehicles on the road? So, you know, for us, as we have a really strong voice of what we're doing in terms of environmental, social impact, the other thing is, as this particular channel starts to accelerate, what are we going to be doing about it? How are we going to be partnering with our retailers to be able to have all of these conversations? So as consumers buy online in masses, we're also very aware of the environmental impact that that's having. So it's definitely been an interesting few months as we start to really unpick that. And hopefully you'll see some more that we're going to be doing in that particular space over the coming months and, you know, moving into 2021.
Fascinating, Claire. I'm really grateful for you to share this time with us. I know you're super busy, as most people are at the moment. So thank you very much for sharing your insights and your experience. And we shall stay close and wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much for listening. You know, look forward to hopefully sharing more of what we're doing as we accelerate our journey here. So thanks very much.